Dr. Jeanette H. Leet works for the Minnesota DNR in the Division of Ecological and Water Resources, and she is the unit supervisor for the hydrogeology and groundwater. She's been involved in groundwater and groundwater surface water interaction applications and applied research since 1976, and she's going to talk to us today about the process to define groundwater management areas.
But to you, I'm Jenny. So normally when someone applies for a permit, we look at that location. Here, this yellow dot. What we might consider would be the impact of pumping at that location on the aquifer. One well pumping, not much impact. Possibly we would get around to considering the impact on a neighboring stream. Once again, one well, maybe not much impact. But what if, in reality, this is what the watershed looks like, where all of those blue dots are pumping wells and the red ones are surface water withdrawals? Maybe that would get a little bit overwhelming, and maybe we would miss some possible impacts because it's practically impossible to figure out all those interconnections. This is where we get around to something that's probably been mentioned three times previously today. Under the State Water Plan comprehensive framework, we need to move up a level to the watershed basis. Of course, that's not all that easy because we are talking groundwater and we don't know quite where the edges are. But we're willing to try to deal with that. What we need to include here, though, is the ecosystem. And under comprehensive land and water management, we might be able to avoid some of the unintended impacts of things we might try. That was also mentioned earlier. So the holistic strategy would be to move up a level in analysis, but move down several levels in governmental involvement, and to include the people who live on the land, those who actually can make some changes, learn together, and make changes together. If there's money, financial incentives might be able to be part of it. Education has to be part of it. Information sharing, possibly these new systems that we've just mentioned. Having our time series data available online, all of our climate data, which is already quite well available to us as professionals. We want to make the surface water and groundwater information equally available, and one would hope through a common portal. We aren't alone in this. Several agencies have responsibilities for water. DNR's primary responsibility is in the quantity. We'll blame industrial pollutants on PCA. We'll have MDA deal with any pesticide or fertilizer issues, and MDH has got to keep our drinking water safe, and those wells must be installed correctly. So what's in DNR's toolbox? Under our authority, we have that permit-by-permit process. We can tell the individual permit holder that we would like you to carry out an aquifer test because we don't know enough about your potential impacts. But we also have statute and rule authority to move forward in this more holistic way. Instead of saying, now you saw that first overview of an area that I showed, instead of saying each one of these appropriators should have a monitoring well, don't you think a coordinated approach could deal with a lot fewer monitoring wells, and that targeted aquifer testing would give us the parameters we likely need? So if we work together, we could probably spend less money, because right now, the last permit applicant is the one I'm asking for this information, and that isn't equitable. And in one of those slides, remember you saw the social environment and what was the other big circle, but equity was somewhere in between there. We have to have viable, equitable, all those nice words. We have to have limits, and we should all decide what those limits are, because if we don't do it that way, it's like not going to happen. Within the rules and in the statute 103G.287, we have guidance on how we should start setting up management areas for groundwater. Now, this is a DNR bias. There could be another kind of area set up to deal with some other issue within the primary authority of that other agency. but because DNR has the quantity point, will probably be involved somehow in all such areas that end up being set up. We have to have the area size under control. We have to be able to manage within that context. It's always scale. It can't be too small, but it can't be too big. We have to have enough information to be able to look at the setting, so that's where we'll be collecting data. Hydrologic and physical characteristics. It would be nice if we would start out in places that really need us. And we actually have started, but usually crisis-driven. But there is a need to decide where we should start directing our efforts. And for that purpose, there is currently an interagency working group sitting down together and trying to feel out what will we be doing when we are doing it right. And to help that working group create this picture of where we should start and how we should start without the crisis mode interfering. Yes, we'll deal with these crises, but where should we really start if protect and restore is part of what we want to do? Because it's cheaper to prevent than to fix. Our group has proposed some criteria, and because we don't have full agreement in the interagency group, I'm just saying this is what DNR has put on the table. We can't get going without the communities. We need to perhaps go to areas where we know of water use conflicts pending, where the possibility for increasing water use is known, where population is expected to grow, where the resources are sensitive, and perhaps where there's geologic vulnerability. And so we developed the GIS project from hell. Thank you, Joy. We mapped our areas of concern just in terms of hydrogeologic setting. You know, not much at all up in the northeast. Over on the northwest side, we've got those thick clays with interbedded beach ridge systems and some deep aquifers, possibly Cretaceous, and you don't know how good the water's going to be from the Cretaceous. Then we go down to the southwest, lucky if you find some bedrock knobs. Southeast has got the karst. We've got quality issues there. We have the Decorah Edge and the St. Lawrence Edge to wonder about. And then, of course, we have our sand plain systems in the middle and the population trends in the crosshatched areas. Superimpose that on where the state would like to see some new business. This is a ARC info exercise trying to put together where the rail transport is, because you can move those ethanol tankers. Where are the natural gas pipelines, because you can feed a peaking power plant? Where do we have the irrigation centers? Where are the aquifers more vulnerable, if protection is one of our goals? Where do we need to work on BMPs? Maybe they ought to be more stringent, said BMPs, in certain areas. Where do we have ecosystems that, at least in their current intact state or semi-intact state at present, are dependent on near-surface groundwater? That's this map. PCA's surface areas of concern. And then the scope of the challenge with regard to the agricultural conversion, black being the currently cultivated land cover. And with that, I'll declare this done, and my case study will be in my PowerPoint available online after Sean gets them all posted.